killers, murderers, decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, 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 and welcome back to Decoding the Crime Verse. My name is Danny, and I'm joined with...
Glory!
Correct, and today, well, today is a bit of an interesting one, if I do say so myself. And it is a disappearance. I feel like we've been doing a lot of disappearances, but this one... It's like, you know, someone who just disappears in broad daylight, and you like, but how? How, when there were people around in a busy street on a sunny day, does someone just vanish?
Abducted by aliens.
Oh my goodness, I can't. Did you just say that?
Maybe they were taken by the Matrix.
You talk such nonsense. You know
I'm joking around.
No, I know you're joking around, but that doesn't mean I can't tease you about it.
Whatever.
Okay, so we are dealing with a disappearance today. And like I said, it's quite an interesting one. So we have a girl who was 25 years old, and she was the niece of a justice of the United States Supreme Court and the daughter of a family so wealthy that she could be called an heiress. Okay, so this family has lots of money, and she's described, and I quote, she was described as the summit of her youth, rich, especially preferred, blessed with prospects, and to the outer eye, completely happy. That's a definition and a half. But anyway, her name was Dorothy Harriet Camille Arnold. So Miss Dorothy, at 2 o'clock on the afternoon of December 12th, 1910, she stood talking to a friend outside Brentano's bookshop that was located on 5th Avenue and 27th Street in New York City. A moment later, she vanished, never to be seen again. At least never by anyone who both recognized her and acknowledged her existence. So actually, looking that we are now currently on the 13th of December, this actually happened yesterday. Okay, wait, how many years is that? 114 years ago.
That's crazy.
What? That's madness, this woman. That's a little bit scary for me that after 114 years, people still don't know where you are. You're obviously dead, clearly. But it's a bit scary that no one has found anything, especially with the technology we currently have. So, one newspaper remarked, she disappeared from one of the busiest streets on earth at the sunniest hour of a brilliant afternoon with thousands within sight and reach. Men and women who knew her on every side and officers of the law thickly strewn about her path. So how and why did the young heiress disappear of her own accord? Was she kidnapped? Was she murdered? Did she just leave? What happened? So let's look into it. So if you look at her family, they were, like I said, very rich. And the family was run by... The main man of the family, which was Francis R. Arnold, and he was a 73-year-old businessman who proudly traced his lineage all the way back to the Mayflower, which, if you don't know, is the first ship that ever arrived in America. And it was his sister who married the Supreme Court Justice Rufus Peckham. So on the day of her disappearance, she wore a very well-tailored suit and had this big blue serge coat with a large, huge silver fox mutt. So basically what those things are is they like to put your hands in to keep them warm. So they look like little, like it looks like you've wrapped your hands in like a blankie. So she was also carrying a satin handbag. So she's not going out like for hiking or anything. She's going for shopping in December for Christmas, you know, rich heiress. I mean, she's dressed the part. She descended the stairway of her family home on 108th East 79th Street at 11 o'clock in the morning on December 12th. And she informed her mother that she planned to spend the day shopping for an evening dress to wear to her sister's coming out party. So it's her sister's now come of age and she's able to be part of society. That's what they did those days. She departed from the home and she carried no luggage. It is speculated that she had about $25 of her monthly allowance. So $25 in 1910 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
It also was said that she had withdrawn $36 from the bank the day before as she was having lunch with some friends, and it was presumed she also had this money on her. And she walked along 79th Street towards Fifth Avenue. And again, Fifth Avenue is the most upscale, luxurious street in New York City. Those who glimpsed her familiar figure recalled that her demeanor was normal and she looked cheerful. So nothing amiss. She's happy. It's Christmas time. I know it's a great time of the year. At Fifth Avenue, she turned left and headed downtown. There she paused at Park and Tilford's candy counter to purchase a half-pound box of chocolates. The sales girl recognized her as a familiar customer and actually charged the candy to the family account. So I suppose what was beneficial is you'll see throughout this case, she often made charges to the family account. That's how they were able to track her movements so accurately, because in the 1910s, there's no surveillance footage. So it's actually through these purchases that we were able to see where on earth this woman was. Dorothy then returned to the street for a second lap, walking about 52 blocks in total. I don't know how far that is. 52 blocks a lot. You do more walking than I do.
52 blocks.
It would be a lot.
I think so. There is quite a bit of walking. I just don't know how many it would be exactly.
I don't know how many kilometers it would be, but I'd consider... I mean, she was out for most of the afternoon, so it was definitely a bit of walking. It was also known that Dorothy wanted to be a writer. 2 months before she disappeared, she had actually requested her father's permission to live in an apartment in Greenwich Village, which was a district that was known for stimulating creative efforts. So she basically just wanted some inspiration. But her father did not agree, and he said, and I quote, "A good writer can write anywhere." And so he refused Dorothy's permission to leave. And obviously in the 1910s, with the patriarchal system still heavily in place, if the father said no, was no.
Yeah.
She then during the next few weeks actually wrote a short story called, and I don't actually know how to say this, Poinsettia Flames. Don't ask me, because I've never seen this word before in my entire life. She wrote the short story but made the mistake of actually telling her family about it, and they began teasing her about her literary dreams. And unfortunately, it was rejected by agencies and publishers. And by the afternoon of her disappearance, she'd actually written another short story called Lotus Leaves. And there is the question, they never found out, was it rejected? And did this rejection actually play a role in her disappearance?
Yeah.
So back to her walk. So she's obviously got the candy and she's back walking. Well, I think it was chocolates. She walked down Fifth Avenue. Her destination was then Brentano's bookstore, where she was observed leafing through books in the store. And she finally picked out, and the book was called An Engaged Girl's Sketches by Emily Colvin Blake. And apparently it was just full of like love stories. And she purchased it again on the family account. So again, we were able to know she was definitely there. She then walked out with the wrap book under her arm when she met an old acquaintance, a girl named Gladys King. And the girl stood chatting for several minutes outside the store. Gladys then excused herself as she was late to meet her mother for lunch. And this is the last person to ever see Dorothy. And she was never seen again. So this is the last official place that we know she was. She was at this bookstore and she spoke to her friend, and after that, nothing. No clue, no evidence, no one saw her. And the thing was, is she's a well-known person, a well-known face. So how did this person just vanish into thin air? So let's return to her family home. So never had Dorothy actually skipped a meal without warning the family ahead of time. And so when she failed to return for dinner, they grew increasingly worried, as any normal family would. And they began to make some phone calls to Dorothy's close friends in the chance that she had dropped in to see them. They told them that she had not, and the Arnolds begged that they not mention this call had ever been made. So, unfortunately, this family makes some very questionable decisions after finding out their daughter is missing. So, actually, after they made all these phone calls, later that night, Elsie Henry, which was one of the friends that they had called, called back to ask if Dorothy was home. Obviously, she's a worried friend, and so she phones back being like, have you found her? And Mrs. Arnold answered the phone, right, and said, yes, she's here.
Oh, wow.
But she was not there, right? And Elsie then asked to speak to Dorothy, when the mom went silent and then said, oh no, she has a headache, and went straight to bed. Okay. The next morning, the family settled on another strange move when they decided not to summon the police. Rather, they contacted a man named John S. Keith, who was a friend of John, who is Dorothy's brother. And he was a junior partner in a law firm named Garvin K. Armstrong. When he arrived at the Arnold home, Keith was taken directly to Dorothy's room. Everything seemed to be in perfect order. The clothes were hanging in the closet. And upon opening the desk drawer, Keith found a pile of professional letters, some of which had foreign postmarks. On the desktop, they noted there was two transatlantic steam train full, not steam train, as if a train could go on the ocean, steamship. Getting down on his knees, they also found that in the fireplace there was a burned amount of paper. But when looking through it, they couldn't really find any words that could indicate what the papers were.
Yeah.
He then said, okay, let's look through the morgues, hospitals, and jails to see if her body has come up.
Mm.
Okay. And he offered to conduct the search himself. He was hoping, he was quite new in the law firm, and he was hoping that if he brought these people on as a client, it would be very good for him. So he was trying his best to like be in their good books. So he says, let me go and do the search without informing the police. Still, over 6 weeks, he spent days in New York, Boston, and Philadelphia, walking through hospital beds, examining nameless corpses, and peering at unfortunate young females in jail. But his search led nowhere, and finally he recommended that they call the detectives. I would think you would have done that when she originally went missing.
Yeah.
But anyway, and so they immediately mailed descriptive images of Dorothy to police departments all over the country and offered her an award of $1,000 if for any information that would lead to her return. Deputy Police Commissioner William J. Flynn advised for an immediate meeting with the press. This would give the widest possible publicity to Dorothy's disappearance. But the father did not like this. Until the time, only the family knew, and a few friends knew, that she was missing. But eventually he gave in. So he clearly didn't want to make this
a public matter, yeah.
On the afternoon of the 25th, he called reporters to his office as if he wished the interview to be over as soon as possible. He immediately informed the reporters that he believed his daughter was dead. That was it. And he thought, okay, interview done, short and sweet. They then kept asking him questions. And one reporter specifically asked if Mr. Arnold had objected to his daughter keeping company with men. And he said, it's not true that I objected to her having men call at the house. I would have been glad to see her associate more with young men than she did, especially some young men with brains and positions, one whose profession or business would keep him occupied. I don't approve of young men who have nothing to do.
Yeah.
So he clearly had high standards. But he actually was referring to someone specific who was George C. Crimscon, I think, Jr. And he was a plump, sideburned 42-year-old. His daughter was 25.
Damn.
42-year-old who lived with his elderly parents in Pittsburgh. George urged all who met him to call him Junior. Soon the newspapers revealed that Dorothy and George had met while she was at Bryn Mawr and had actually called themselves engaged. After this came a real shocker. Recently, the two had actually spent a week together in Boston. So in 1910, Dorothy had gone with her family to their summer home in York Harbor, Maine. But mid-September, she asked her parents if she could go to Cambridge to spend some time with a college classmate named Theodora Bates. But she did not go to Cambridge. Instead, she stayed in Boston, where she was met by Mr. George, who had arrived the day before and registered at the Hotel Essex on the morning of Dorothy's arrival, and had even gone to get a room reserved for her with a bath. During the following week, the two were seen together constantly. So clearly a relationship, but not one that was approved of by the family.
Yeah.
Okay. On September 24th, Dorothy had returned to the York Harbor and George went back to Pittsburgh to be with his parents. Early in October, the Arnolds returned to New York, and it was time that Dorothy made her request to have the Village apartment. So right after she had met this man, fallen in love, whatever, that's when she actually had asked to move out, but her father had said no. And that's again when she wrote her two stories. And then just again before Thanksgiving, she drew her form. So just before Thanksgiving, she again wanted to go and see Theodora Bates. This time, though, she actually did. She didn't use this as a cover. And so Dorothy actually arrived at Theodora's home late Wednesday night, which I'm assuming was the day before Thanksgiving. And on Thanksgiving morning, she expressed the desire to remain in bed. And that same morning, there was a bulky envelope that was delivered to Dorothy, and Theodora actually thought it must have contained the rejected manuscript of Dorothy's second short story, Lotus Leaves. Yet, there is nothing to support this assumption. Dorothy, still in bed, did not open the envelope or even comment on it, but tossed it aside indifferently. Theodora, along with her curiosity, was fully aroused, asked no questions of the fear of hurting her friend's feelings. On Friday, Dorothy came downstairs and said she was going home. But she was supposed to be there till Monday. So, as you can see, we have a lot of interesting things. And we will have more. This will have a part two to the show, because if I have to tell you how much more information about this case we have, it's a bit shocking. And so we will continue this show in a part two. So make sure you're back to find out what some of the theories are and the speculation surrounding Miss Dorothy are. But so far, if we can just recap, she went for a walk. She was seen by lots of people, and she just disappeared out of nowhere. And what's starting to come out is there was a lover. So did she disappear to go and live with him because her parents didn't approve? Was she depressed and upset by her manuscript not being published and did something about that? Was she kidnapped? Was she murdered? What happened to her? So we will be back. Well, yes, and we will discuss this, because I have some theories. I'm sure Gloria has his theories as well.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about all of them now. They're brewing.
They're brewing. And we will be back with them. We will finish the story. We will finish we will deal with what some of the consequences that happened after her death that are also a little bit suspicious, especially surrounding her family. Her family, for me, it's a little bit weird. Especially the mother's phone call saying, no, she's at the house, when she was not at the house, and keeping it quiet for 6 weeks before getting police involved. For me, there's some suspicious activity there. But next week, however, is our Christmas show. But the week after that, we will be back with the story. So we hope to see you all there. Otherwise, we will see you same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.